You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Our next story begins almost 20 years ago, on May 5th, 1993. That's when the bodies of 3 8-year-old boys were found murdered by a creek in West Memphis, Arkansas. 1 month later, teenagers Damian Eccles, Jason Baldwin, and Jesse Miskelly were arrested and then convicted of brutally raping, mutilating, and killing the boys. Those three became known as the West Memphis Three. They grew from teenagers to men behind bars, and they were in prison for more than 18 years before they were finally released. Two men who were largely responsible for their release are Joseph Berlinger and Bruce Sinofsky. They're directors of a documentary that followed the stories of the West Memphis Three from the moment of their arrest, and then they produced a trilogy of films on the subject. The last film is called Paradise Lost Three: Purgatory, and it's been nominated for an Oscar this year. I spoke to them recently, and I asked Berlinger how they knew this was going to be an important story that had to be told.
Well, I don't know if we knew it was necessarily in it. Was going to be an important story, and certainly we didn't know it was going to be three films over two decades. But we knew it was a story that attracted us. And one of the great ironies of this three-film, two-decade mission to exonerate these guys is that when we first went down, we thought we were making a film about guilty teenagers, and they were finally released after a chorus of protest over these guys being incarcerated. But when we first went down, we thought we were making, like a real-life River's Edge, you know, about bored teens and teen killers and why would they do such a thing. And once we started digging into the evidence and talking to the West Memphis Three themselves, it became clear to Bruce and I that it was a story of people who had been wrongfully arrested and then eventually wrongfully convicted.
And one of the things you learned is that sometimes evidence isn't what it seems. Take a listen to this. This is Don Horgan speaking, the post-conviction attorney for Damian Eccles.
First of all, you had a horrific crime. You had community hysteria around the event.
I hope y'all all burn in hell and are tormented for eternity in a day.
You had shoddy police work with a very narrow focus on, certain individuals from the get-go without really a considered assessment of all the possibilities.
And what you're talking about here in the documentary is this sort of frenzy that got whipped up. Understandable, considering what happened to the victims. But also it was a frenzy that influenced and tainted the course of justice. Is that right?
Well, certainly it polluted the jury pool. You know, you had ministers on Sunday saying that these three young men were guilty, and they were, the newspapers and the news were leading with this story every single day. So it was impossible, in a way, to get people on the jury that wouldn't want to convict them. As Joe said, we went down there thinking these guys were guilty. And one on one wasn't equaling two. We met the families of both sides of the situation. We met the judge. We met the prosecutors. We met the defense teams. And then we finally met Damian, Jason, and Jesse. And it was clear to us that they weren't the people that were being described to us by any number of people. And if you were in the courtroom, as we were for both trials, you could see that there was no way they were going to get a fair trial. Not because they had fair representation, because their defense counsel wasn't all that good. And you had a judge who was a former prosecutor who, in many situations, were helping the prosecution. So there was no way in our minds that these guys were going to get a fair trial.
And it almost takes three films to get through this, because what became what was going to be a film about the kind of psychology of these disturbed teens then became this question of how could this happen, right? Here's Dan Horgan again.
This case is a great illustration of why wrongful convictions can happen, because it had every form of kind of unreliable evidence that's out there.
The real horror here was that these three men were charged, and that is really due to human failing.
The second voice you hear there is Dennis Reardon, who's the post-conviction attorney for Damian Eccles. And so through your documentary, you had to kind of unknit all these threads that had been knit together to form a conviction for these three teenagers, right?
Well, you know, the first film, I think, was really a pretty objective presentation. I mean, we deeply embedded ourselves in that community 8 months before the trials and really had amazing access. And so I think the first film was much more of a neutral presentation of both sides, and the truth rose to the top for so many people. But we were stunned that even though we got pats on the back for making a great film, it didn't really, you know, get off the entertainment page onto the news pages, and it really didn't have any impact in the state of Arkansas. So the second and third films become much more of a critique of justice gone awry. But yeah, I mean, we analyze exactly how this went down, and it's just, you know, to me the film is a searing indictment of the death penalty, because you see how easily Damien Echols could have been put to death had it not been for the fluke that filmmakers were around to cover it.
I really do believe these people would have gotten away with murdering me if it would not have been for what you guys did, for being there in the very beginning and getting this whole thing on tape so that the rest of the world sees what was happening. If not for that, these people would have murdered me, swept this under the rug, and I wouldn't be anything but a memory right now.
That is Damien Echols speaking for himself. It's from the new documentary Paradise Lost 3, the last in a trilogy that followed the West Memphis 3 from their arrest all the way through their conviction and then eventually their release from prison. So, Bruce, what do you think? I mean, there's lots of themes over the course of three documentaries. There's many things that come out of here. But for you, what should people come away from this saying, this needs to be taken care of first?
Well, first of all, you know, they were released last year from jail. They had to plead guilty to a lesser charge, and they would be released for time served, basically. And it's ridiculous that these guys who didn't commit these crimes have to walk around, you know, with that sort of Damocles over their head. You know, from the beginning, Joe and I, when we went to Memphis to fly back to New York after the convictions, we were convinced that they were innocent. And we decided that either filmically or on a personal level, we were going to do everything we could to get these guys out. They're out, but, you know, it would be great if they were exonerated and their record was clean.
Joe, in the end, were you ever able to answer the question for yourself? What was it that made this community so bound and determined to find these teenagers guilty?
Well, you know, it wasn't one thing, but I think it was this lethal brew that happened. You know, a number of things coming together. First, you had a horrific crime. I mean, what was done to these children was unspeakable. The second thing was that, and I'm not trying to be negative about religion or Christianity, but this is a very fundamentalist part of the country where people literally believe in heaven and hell, and that devils walk amongst us, and a part of the world where people believed in their authority figures. So when you had the prosecution saying that the case on a scale of 1 to 10 was an 11, when in fact the evidence was weak, and you had the prosecution talking about devil worshiping, you had a group of people who were predisposed to believe that kind of thing. You know, so this devil worshiping story coming off of this nationwide satanic hysteria that gripped this country from the late 80s and early 90s, you know, made it a believable story, and it was a crime that had to be solved. And, you know, the local media played a role as well. I mean, there was this very flawed confession in which the time of day was changed multiple times. It was basically a coerced confession. But the local paper, weeks before the trial, printed it as one contiguous statement without any of the problematic
changes.
They edited it. Yeah, basically. They printed the final product. And that, you know, that polluted the jury pool. You know, it was just not possible for these guys to get a fair trial, I think, in that region at that time with this crime.
So what is next for these three teenagers who spent as many years behind bars as they'd spent growing up prior to the trial and will forever be known as members of the West Memphis Three?
Well, Jason is living in the Seattle area, and he plans on going to school April 2nd. He wants to be a lawyer, and he wants to work with people that have similar situations. Jesse has gone back to West Memphis, Arkansas, and is living with, not with his family, but living with some people that are really keeping an eye on him. And Damien's a very gifted guy. I think he'll do very, very well on his own. He's married. He's got the support of a lot of people. I think he'll do just fine.
Joseph Berlinger and Bruce Sanofsky directed the new documentary Paradise Lost 3. It's been nominated in the feature documentary category at this year's Academy Awards, which is coming up on Sunday.
And next Tuesday, Michigan holds an open GOP primary. That's what our listeners are talking about. Molly from Michigan posted on our website, thetakeaway.org. Though I fully support President Obama, I will make a point to vote in the Republican primary here in Michigan. The purpose is to help send Romney a strong message. He was dead wrong to oppose the auto bailouts. He should not get one vote in Michigan, let alone win. Well, liberal websites and liberal activists are encouraging liberals to vote in that Michigan open primary to make things difficult for Mitt Romney. Give us your take at 8778-MY-TAKE or post to our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm Todd Zwillick.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.